Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
And I'm Zach Schaefer.
We created a candid podcast for busy people. We get right to the point of our topics, and we keep them to 30 minutes or less.
We wanted to put our ideas out there, share it with people we love, and if it spreads, great.
Our show has no edits and no gimmicks.
Like it or don't, we initially started this project for ourselves, to record our thoughts for our kids, but our friends and family thought we should share it, so here you go. Welcome back to Life Lab. I'm Zach.
And I'm David.
And today we're talking about a very simple, straightforward topic, and that is intellectual freedom.
Yeah, very simple and straightforward. Yeah, right.
Absolutely. So, Dave, what are you thinking when you hear that phrase, when we walked in this morning, and he's like, what are we talking about? And we have a list of topics that we've ordered for future shows, and I said this was... I think it was actually one of his, intellectual freedom. He goes, oh, God, that's a doozy. That is a hot-button controversial topic.
I did not say doozy.
He did not, for the record. I think he should have.
Yes. I did say it was a hot-button, and it's controversial. I think at its very nature, it has to be, right? So if we're talking about the ability to explore any idea without, you know, being punished for it, the ability, you know, I put down here, we always open with a definition. This isn't an actual definition, but I think it's sort of like the right of an individual to basically explore an idea or admit to exploring an idea without fear of repercussion or punishment or judgment. That's what I think it is. Do you have
any? Yeah, no, absolutely. So do we have intellectual freedom in the United States?
Absolutely not.
Okay, interesting. Tell me why.
So it's protected by the Constitution, but I guess the line is without repercussion, right? No, there's definitely repercussion. Is it a legal repercussion? Do you end up being put in prison for it? No, not at all. But will you be ostracized by society? Absolutely you will. If you say certain things in a public setting, even in a private setting, you will have a reaction from the people that hear that you said those things, that you had even considered certain ideas.
I agree, but do you think that that is just in our current society?
No.
Or, okay, that's of all time.
You
so
just
back
asked
with
if
Thomas Jefferson, yeah. The same thing too. People will be judged, people will be...
Oh, I don't think that's a function of today being bad. I think in the past it's probably been much worse.
Right.
You know, as of late, because of the spread of information and how quickly ideas can get around. I think that you're seeing the reaction to the ideas growing as well. But I just think that's a function of the ideas being able to be spread quicker as well. There is a really great term that, and we'll delve into this. I'm jumping around. But basically, what this idea that I heard was, is that imagine an idea is like an invader, like a virus, right? So if we're talking about the internet, that has really increased that idea's ability to spread and to infect new cells, new areas, basically get to new people. And if you think of the flip side of what is the opposite of intellectual integrity or intellectual freedom would be... basically, censorship.
Suppression and censorship.
Suppression.
Even self-censorship.
And so when you think about that, in this analogy, that would be the immune system of society, right? So censoring, trying to kill that idea, trying to shut it down, trying to not let it be exposed to anything else. And naturally, it's interesting, if you look at society as an organism, it seems like this is the way that this works, right? An idea goes out there. If society as a whole judges it poorly for whatever reason, you know, because of their circles, their norms, their traditions, their cultures, their shared beliefs, they will react negatively to it, almost like an immune system would, mm-hmm. in trying to kill it and shut
right.
it down. So I like that analogy, and I wanted to bring that up and talk about it.
I agree. And I think this one we're just going to jump all over people, so yeah. Sorry, there's not going to be as much logic
yeah.
to the flow
yeah, we
of our conversation.
We can't keep this.
Yeah, there's just too much to be said, and we want to keep it brisk.
But anyway, let me close my thought. that's why I think that it's such a hot button topic today, because the virus has gained this ability to spread so much that naturally you're seeing that reaction on the immune system side. So they're trying to quell it harder. You're hearing more about censorship efforts and backlash, you know, competing ideas.
Sure. I mean, for me, again, I'm going to go all over here. Yeah. When I hear intellectual freedom, everything for me ties back to decision making. So if you're intellectual, what you're doing, or what that says, is you have a greater ability to summarize arguments and information, analyze arguments and information, and most importantly, synthesize your own, right? Break something down, summarize it, be able to express that to someone else, but then rebuild them in a new way to form a new concept or idea that, as Dave said, will hopefully spread if you think it's a good idea. But what I'm seeing in our current society under the Trump administration, and this was also there under the Obama administration, is the rejection of intellectualism and elitism and being smart, right? People, it seems like people almost need to hide the fact that they're smart. And I have some interesting thoughts on that. For me, I do think I'm a smart guy. I think Dave's a smart guy. But I don't think we hold our intelligence over others the way a lot of people do. Mm. And I think that's what's actually being critiqued when people are putting down intellectuals and elitists. It's not the fact, in my opinion, that they're smart. It's the fact how they communicate their intelligence to others, right? It's creating and using that language and jargon to simply say, I know these terms and you don't. They don't engage in the act of translation to help others, to bring others into their knowledge. They often use it in a way to say, look at how smart I am.
Yeah.
So that's one thought. The other thing, though, is the way that Trump has used the term a lot is, you know, he's very negative, condescending with the idea of intellectuals and elitists, and we got to drain the swamp of all these people.
But hold on, stop.
No, no, no. You get to finish your topic.
Do you think there's a connection? You get to finish your thought.
Right. Don't cut me off. All right. He puts down these experts and these elitists. What is an expert? Somebody with a body of knowledge and who can make sound, consistent decisions in a specific niche or area. Who does he surround himself by before he was president and currently? Teams of advisors that try to help him make good decisions as running the Trump organization and as president. So advisors are nothing but experts. He's surrounded by accountants, financial advisors, and attorneys telling him what to do around every turn. And yet then he'll come out and say, oh, these terrible elitists and intellectuals. That's exactly what those people are. And it's so hypocritical, not only of him, but of anyone that engages in that sort of war on experts.
I don't disagree one bit. I didn't want to cut you off. I wanted to point out something that you were doing that I think was a tactic, that is a tactic that politicians use. They tie two terms together that don't necessarily need to be tied together or don't justify being tied together. Experts and elitists are two different things. But he has attached that term to it in order to try and make it look negative. It's a reaction of the immune system that
I was talking about. Great narrative that whoever his strategist, or maybe it was him, has created, because he's pretty strategic with his fourth grade language he uses. The other thing I wanted to mention in terms of experts, and this is my own personal philosophy tied to this idea, is what I call the expert dilemma. There's so much knowledge out there for how to put the baby to sleep, how to build a pull-up bar in your backyard, how to do whatever you want to do. Right? So you can use and rely all of this expert knowledge out there. And you should. But in the same viewpoint, you shouldn't become dependent on outside experts. You should be a self-made man or a self-made woman and use that knowledge to build yourself up and increase your own intelligence and your own skill sets. We have friends and I have business partners. If something happens, they immediately just turn to outsource that concept. And I find that extremely problematic. And I don't think that's going to be reversed because that's what the internet does. But I just want you to remember that whoever's listening, all of you have some amount of expertise within you. You don't constantly have to turn to others. I mean, where would it end? We now have life coaches, breathing experts. Yeah. So I'm sure there's a walking expert. Let me teach you how to walk more effectively. There's an eye contact and nonverbals expert. It's a joke, in my opinion. I hope a stand-up comic has made fun of all these experts and coaches out there in the world that I'm not sitting up straight enough. I need to hire a posture coach to help me.
It's globalism and outsourcing to the extreme. It's like when you go to a party and people say, "What do you do?" I work with technology. Okay, then you don't do anything else, clearly.
Right.
Right? Anything else? Change your oil in your car? No, I can't do that. I got to pay someone to do
that. So I'll get a little intellectual on you since we're talking about intellectual freedom. What we're talking about is what Jürgen Habermas called the colonization of the sociocultural life world. It's applying managerial principles of efficiency and standardization and consistency and normalization to our private cultural lives. Mm. Yeah. Our personal lives. And he finds that that has some real crises of meaning, not just at the individual identity level, but also at a societal level. And I think terrorism, and I know he's wrote about this in Noam Chomsky, absolutely ties into what's going on there. Those people over there don't want that applied to their life in our manner. And they're lashing out in that way. Now, clearly it's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And they need to be brought to justice in a very public way, in my opinion. But I think that that's one thing that's going on. We're applying the narrative and logic of capitalism and science to all of our personal and private lives, and it's creating this crisis of meaning. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think it's absolutely right, and I think we can apply it in a – I think that the lens that we were talking about could use some clarification. So we were talking about intellectualism and the ability to be intellectual without being – criticized for it, for not acting like you're too smart or something like that, or lording it over people, being an elitist. I think you could take the theory. What was his name?
Habermas.
Yeah, I think you could take that and you can apply it to something that's a little bit more basic, which is that we kind of skipped over, and I think is a building block for this whole subject that we need to talk about. Which is, you said something really important. You said, in order to exercise your intellect, you need to take other ideas, you need to be able to break them down, and then you need to be able to synthesize your own. I think the important part here that we can't ignore is when you are taking in other ideas and using them as your building blocks, which ones do you use as a foundation to build on, and which ones do you reject outright? Because they go against your beliefs, they go against what you were taught, they go against your upbringing. Yeah. I mean, think of all the topics that you can put into this, that are quote unquote, offensive, right? So people, what is being offended? And I'll tie it back one last time to my analogy. When you're offended, it's almost like your behavioral immune system alerting, like, oh, there's an invader. This is bad. You got to keep this out. So whenever we're talking about applying any kind of theory to these things, I'd like to, like, let's break it down first and say, well, what ideas are we taking in to use as our foundation to synthesize with? Which ones are we rejecting and why? Let's explore that before we can then talk about how we apply managerial theory to it and sure, make it efficient and everything. But that's absolutely true. But we're doing that already. Like,
oh, yeah. I'm not saying that this is happening out there. I do it in my life every day. I run my fucking life according to scripts and efficiencies, and it makes me feel good, right? Yes. But at another level, it's what stories you tell your kids at night. We look up, how many stories should I read my child at night? How much is this going to affect their neurological programming? I mean, just read the kid a fucking story.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know?
No doubt.
A couple things. Well, we're talking about NLP there a little bit, neuro-linguistic programming. One reason that I believe a lot of intellectual people get critiqued, again, is less for what they know and more for how they express what they know around people who don't know the same things.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very – the people that get critiqued as being elitist, they are not audience-centered communicators, right? So they practice what's NLP people call chunking, or what I'd call subcategorizing, all the time, and it makes other people feel dumb, in my opinion. So an example of that would be – Dave, ask me something about sports. Anything.
Who's your favorite basketball player?
Well, Dave, basketball is just one of many spectator sports that I find enjoyment in.
Yeah.
Okay. So you take an idea and you put it into a smaller subcategory to make someone feel small, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Yeah.
You're trying to reprogram them. Or from a power perspective, Robert Greene would talk about, is you're trying to shift the power in the conversation and take control back. I didn't answer his question. I placed his question into a smaller subcategory. So why I wanted to talk about this is at a very basic level, everything that's going on with intellectual freedom is about power.
It is about power. And when we talk about this behavioral immune system, it's like there's an authority figure out there that decides what is okay and what is not okay. So when I was saying this, I said, you know, intellectual freedom is the ability to admit that you have considered or thought about or currently hold a certain idea, right?
Right.
So let's talk about ideas that the authority structure out there that we live in every day is not okay with. Let's just throw some out there, right? So you put one on the board that was great, atheism, right?
Yep.
Not okay.
Not okay.
You
in
cannot,
any country. You.
No.
First of all, it's very difficult for atheists to organize themselves, even though they have huge numbers, because they're such free thinkers.
Well, and because they're bad people at their core, right? You can't be an atheist
Amen.
And be a good person, right?
Another one. Liberal or open-minded and open-ended views on pornography and sex. A libertarian view. If a woman or a man wants to be a prostitute or engage in pornography, they should be the best goddamn porn star there is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Boy, that makes people outside of California uncomfortable,
yeah,
especially
no
in the Midwest.
No kidding. Child labor.
Child labor.
That's a very good one.
What if people wanted to rethink lowering that age? We've got a lot of kids in communities that are struggling, that don't go to school, the
yeah.
schools are poor. What if they were able to get a trade?
They could,
right?
Use, that, they could use
talk about controversial.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, when my grandfather worked when he was young, and I'm sure the people before him, you know, maybe we need to go back to that.
Right. And again,
that's
we're
kind,
not advocating
be,
yeah, these no. things, people, but oh, we're talking about.
And
there
let's
are
talk
certain,
about academia.
Well, there
right?
are certain topics that you just don't. And these are way worse yeah. than the religion, politics, and abortion topics.
And let me say some of the things you can't. These two topics are just toxic. You cannot talk about these topics at a workplace or in an academic institution, or I shouldn't even be saying anything about this that's being recorded, to be honest with you. Race, unpopular ideas of race, and gender. Unpopular ideas of gender. Those two things right now are, there's nothing good to come from there.
Yeah, those are difficult. You have to have a very clear and transparent conversation about the conversation before you engage in the conversation.
Yeah.
And that means setting up boundaries, setting the rules of the game.
Well, and let's just put it this way. The societal behavioral immune system has reacted so strongly against those two topics that anything that you say can and will be used out of context against you if you don't align into the agreed upon stance that whoever is arguing against you takes. It's the highest thing that you can be offended on right now.
Right.
And there's nothing you can say about it that is going to win you points with anyone.
Well, the other thing is, as soon as you get any amount of power or success in this world, you get a lot of haters, right? And that's just standard.
No doubt.
So, for instance, we need to know right now, me and you, Dave, that if we ever decide to run for at least statewide office, probably not local municipality, mm-hmm. that people will find this, they will literally go in and they will say, these guys are advocating for child labor.
Yeah, they'll say that.
You know,
yeah.
and that's fine. That's the talking head, take things out of context, talking point culture we live in. I wanted to throw out...
And let's flip that around. Let's say, so it's dangerous, right? Ideas are dangerous. And talking about certain ideas is dangerous for your future reputation, potentially, because it can be used as a weapon against you in the future.
Oh, it is used as a weapon against you.
So because of that, how should one react? How, you know, if we're going to be moral, just people, you talked about justice earlier, saying you believe that, you know, with terrorism, people should be, justice should be served in a very public manner. Well, I mean, there's a whole lot we can go into there. Justice is, whose idea of justice are we talking about?
Right.
You have to have an agreed upon idea of justice, but most people in the U.S. would agree with what you said, I think. But then from there, what do we do to start enacting justice in the world? And what is your responsibility to begin talking about hot button issues like this or not? For me right now, my reaction, and I believe yours is too, is if we ever want to be people who hold any kind of public office or any kind of power or authority structure, we want to not talk about these hot button issues because we know these are weapons that can be used against us in the future. Once you open that Pandora's box, it never goes back. So what is our responsibility to talk about it? Do we have any responsibility to talk about it, or should we just ignore it?
Well, a couple things. One is when you said, you said something along the lines of we have the responsibility to make sure justice is out there. I'm not saying you're saying this, but I just disagree. I don't think America should be Team America, World Police. That's first something I don't believe at all.
I mean more on a personal level, more on that Howard Zinn, you can't be neutral on a moving train.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Did you ask me a question or no?
Yeah. So does an individual, to be a just and moral and righteous individual, have a responsibility for moral outrage, we'll say, to take a stand against ideas that they believe are unjust or not right? Or is it okay for a person to say, I realize that this is a hot button issue, both sides are having a heated reaction, and although I align more with one or the other, I want to stay away from this because it's toxic. There is nothing good here for me. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think you're going to have people who argue both.
Well, and you should, because again, how we started, for me, intellectual freedom is about decision making. So what are they doing? They're thinking their futures, their future options out. They're trying to weigh the data based on the future self that they want to create. I work for XYZ corporation or organization. If I talk about these things in public, I could lose my job. I could stop feeding my kids. I have a mortgage to pay.
Yeah.
You know, those are important questions to think about. Now, do I agree with the fact that they're suppressing and censoring their true beliefs and thoughts? Absolutely not. And that's one thing as an academic that I truly love, is that I can really probably say anything I want. And sure, I'll get a lot of backlash for some of my actual beliefs that most people don't know. But I'm protected and can say those things.
That's amazing. You know, it's amazing that you hold that belief so strongly, because I've heard recently instances of people in academia who are being attacked to the point where they had to move their family out of a city because of the fact that they said the wrong thing.
Right. Well, they engaged in true intellectual freedom, put their actual thoughts and beliefs out there, and it was against the grain of society.
Right.
We focus a lot on intellectual. Let's unpack
freedom
a little bit. One of the greatest professors I've ever had was a sociologist at Texas A&M. His name is slipping me right now, but it'll come to me. And in a 16-week semester, he had us read one huge sociological book each week. And one of them was a book called Freedom in the Making of Western Culture by a sociologist named Orlando Patterson. Really good book. But what stuck with me to this day is how he breaks freedom down, right? As Matt Stone of South Park and Trey Parker remind us, freedom isn't free. It costs $1.05. No, but for real, freedom is three different things. There's sovereign freedom, personal freedom, and civic freedom. Sovereign freedom is power over other people, right? Sovereign freedom is you're the king, you're the CEO, you're the head of your household. You set the rules, you hold the power over others and tell others what to do. And many people in at least Western democratized societies have some degree of sovereign power over someone. Civic freedom, that is our freedom and ability to participate in the governmental structures that we've created, right? Governing by the people, for the people, et cetera, et cetera. But what everyone in America and most Western democracies, when we hear freedom, we go right to personal freedom. And that's the power to. I can go right now if I want and go for a walk. Or I can tell my boss I'm taking a break or a day off. Or I can go pick my kid up from school or do whatever we want. And it's important because we lump almost all the different types of freedoms that exist into that one almost consumer-driven personal type of freedom. So when Dave was asking about this idea of putting these ideas out there and thinking them through, is that moral or just? I think most people would say, yeah, because they're going to think through their personal freedom lens. Right. But if you think through the civic lens, right, and Martin Luther King Jr.'s quote of evil triumphs when good men decide to not take action, basically,
yeah.
Right? And that's more of a civic freedom.
Right.
So for me, I find that many people, myself included, we think freedom, we think personal freedom, day-to-day, operational, what can I do and what can I not do? when we're neglecting civic, which is the glue, the hidden glue that ties our whole society together.
That's I love that description because it gives some guts and some actual structure behind the idea that I was throwing out there of this sort of social immune system, right?
Right.
Well, no, there's a glue that holds us together as a society, and it has
and this
be.
Is one of the more abstract part components right. or right. ingredients of the glue. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think, and viewers, get an answer in your head as well. I teach at Southern Illinois University Edwardsville in the Department of Applied Communication Studies. I study human communication in applied settings such as organizations, corporations, etc. Do you think if you wanted to discuss some controversial idea, you could just come over to SIUE and really start discussing it anywhere you want?
I mean,
we're a public school, we're a state school, we're a university. Yeah. I mean, so tell me, Dave, your opinion of where is freedom of speech on the college campus?
I mean, I guess you technically could. Although, I guess, you know, you have to talk about what is your right to assemble, mm-hmm. what is, you know, if where am I doing this? Am I holding a rally? You know, am I holding signs?
Good.
The Westboro Baptist Church thing comes to mind, right?
Right. So
those people were saying things that a majority of people would consider offensive. They thought that they were doing it on behalf of God, you know. But they were restricted in their geography, where they could stand, you know, and how they wanted to be as seen as possible, right? But they had to follow the laws of the jurisdiction that they were in.
You just got it. So you would think, right? Romanticized free speech, college, university. There are very few, there's a legal technical word for it, but I'll just call them areas or boundaries where you can actually go and get up on your soapbox and talk about whatever you want. Mm. And it's only during certain times of the day.
Right.
You can't go into any classroom and do that.
No.
You can't go into any administration or cafeteria and do that. It's basically two little areas in the quad, I believe, and I could be wrong here, is where you can actually get up and have a bullhorn during certain hours of the day and talk about whatever you want. And I just find that abhorrent. I can't stand it. Why? Because I am all about exposing ignorance. Man, if you have a crazy idea, I want you to yell it loudly and proudly because I want to know your ignorance. I don't want it to be hidden in the dark recesses of the web. So
awesome.
With the West, the Baptist people that would
Westboro
do the funeral,
Baptist, yeah.
Am I saying that they should do that and I agree with it? No. Do I celebrate the fact that they can do it?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And that's a difference. And Noam Chomsky talked about that.
If you're not familiar, they, just to be clear, what they would do is they would hold signs. They would go to like a soldier's funeral and they would hold signs that said, you know, God is happy that this soldier is dead.
Right.
Hopefully there will be thousands more, things like that.
He's punishing us for allowing fags in this
yes,
country.
Yes.
Like they were very anti-homosexual.
Absolutely.
But so do I celebrate the fact that idiots like that can do that? Yes.
Yep.
That's different than supporting their message. Clearly their message is different. However, what I liked were all these motorcycle gangs and military men and women.
They did.
They formed lines to protect the families of the bereaved
yep.
so that they could try to enjoy the funeral and have their ceremony and keep those idiots away.
Well, it's a literal play out of something that I want to talk about, throw out there. So there's this idea that there is the marketplace of ideas, right? So if we're taking a capitalistic stand, there is a marketplace of ideas, and therefore it shouldn't be regulated, right? It should be left open just like pure capitalism, and the good ideas will win based on market forces.
Right. More people will read them and pass them on.
Now, on the flip side, I've heard some academists and some, I think they were pretty far on the left side, saying there are some ideas that are inherently bad and don't even deserve a place on the marketplace of ideas. That's talk about going back to intellectual freedom.
Yeah, it's incoherent with the system.
Yeah, it's like,
again, on the left side, because again, a lot of academics, especially in the liberal arts, are liberal,
mm-hmm.
right? And again, we're stereotyping here. Not that it's good or bad, right or wrong. It's just a fact. And one thing that's always struck me is...
But let me stop and point out something that I find to be ironic. It's funny that And historically, you would consider a liberal person to be someone who would fight for the ability to have intellectual freedom, to fight for the free exchange of ideas, right? But it's gotten to the point now where it's almost like it's backlashing against itself, where we're now saying, no, there are some ideas that are inherently bad. You can't even talk about them.
Yeah, I was saying.
Which seems like a crazy
right-wing. They're about voice and choice, except right. The one voice they don't value or want to hear from is the white man, typically, yeah. Right? The person in charge. I've seen it. And I saw it at Texas A&M when I was down there. We had a good friend. I'll not name him. Our department was definitely full of very left liberal people, and we had created a student organization of which I served as a president for a little bit. And one of the goals was just to give students voice and try to help in decision making for departmental policies and norms. This one person was literally just shunned at meetings, and it was unbelievable. And I'd bring up this fact, like, I thought that people were for voice and dialogue. Nope, not with him. Mm-hmm. His people have been in charge for too long, is one quote I got from another student.
Yeah, no, that's a great quote. I'll tell another story. I mean, we didn't want to go down this road.
And for those of you that know, but Dave and I are both white men.
We're both white men. So didn't want to go down this road. But, you know, this podcast is a reflection of our own daily experiences and the things that we notice. So if we're going to have intellectual freedom and be able to talk, then let's talk. So I was at a donut shop doing some work the other day. And a couple of women were sitting by me at the table. One of them was clearly involved in government, and she was talking about some bills that had been passed recently, or that were proposed recently and that were going to get passed. And she was clearly against one of them. And she said, it's just vile to think that this is even being proposed in our state. And she said, I just know that it's because of the white men who were behind it. This would never happen if there were a woman who had the power to stop it, or even a person of color. And they were saying this as I'm sitting next to them with no regard to me sitting there whatsoever. It's amazing how in this marketplace of ideas, it's just really okay to, who cares about a white man thinks,
right?
They're in power.
Yeah.
They don't deserve any kind of actual consideration. It's
And for anyone that knows Dave and I,
we're good, trying to be
good,
nice
good
people.
Luck trying to categorize our political beliefs,
because yeah, right,
let's just
right.
say it ain't right wing.
Right.
A couple more topics, because we're getting close to time here, Dave. Ideas, right? Everybody talks about their beliefs, my beliefs. I don't like beliefs. Belief systems to me are BS, right?
Yeah.
They form these rigid structures that we have to conform to, and we have to ignore new evidence or ideas that emerge that don't fit our structures and our castles that we build. So I like ideas, and that comes from Robert Anton Wilson, if you remember him. He talks about ideas are playful, they're malleable, they evolve with the historical context with which you're living. So about 5 years ago, I just quit talking about beliefs, and I talk about ideas, because mm-hmm. to me, it makes sense for me personally, morally and how I live my life, to have ideas, because I'm comfortable. I believe they should change over time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing I wanted to just throw out. Two, intellectual freedom, freedom in general, intelligence, experts. One thing forms a foundation of all of this, and it's who's saying it. What's the source of the quality of this information? I'm sure you've heard of Alex Jones, Infowars.com,
wow. Yeah.
Right?
Talk
great provocateur.
A lightning rod of controversy. Yeah.
Now, whether he's intelligent or not, I could care less, but should he be able to say the things like, look, Sandy Hook most likely did not occur, is his statement. But he's really smart because he puts words like most likely or alleged
right,
in there.
Right.
Right. So he's talked to an attorney and he knows what to say there. But those are the types of things that he says. And he's got millions of followers. So should he be allowed to provoke in that kind of manner?
It's interesting. I'll say this. I was laughing because I was looking at the reaction on social media just to the fact that he was even interviewed
by Megyn Kelly.
Yeah, by Megyn Kelly on a major news media. People were flipping out, saying basically angry that he was even interviewed. Like, why would you even, because they would have taken that argument that his ideas are so bad, they don't deserve a place on the marketplace of ideas.
Censor him.
Clearly, NBC or whatever channel, I think it was NBC, yeah. Is a huge central marketplace of ideas. And by allowing him on there, you're doing something bad, right? So those people would have taken that super left side, which is like, yeah, censor. Mm-hmm. Push it down, suppress it. Don't allow it to be said.
Well, to me, both sides of the political party, if you go both major political parties, if you go far enough to the right or left, they end up the same
censorship.
Thing. Absolutely.
Yeah, you're right. It's just in a certain way.
Art Ponder taught me a great question, and it ties into everything we're talking about, specifically with the internet and information, freedom of information, is where's the money? Follow the money.
You do have to follow the money and the power. Let's just bring that
right
out there.
Right? Well, what is a quality source? What kind of criteria? Name me one criteria for a good quality source on the internet, so our listeners can look for these things to make sure it's
okay. I would think that it's probably we'll say accurate, right?
Mm.
Because we hear so much about fake news right now.
Right.
So if I'm going to say something happened, I should be. I should be accurate.
Perfect.
About what happened.
Well, accurate that it happened the way it did. And also, how do you know that? You triangulate. Look at many other news sources. And if you're seeing the same thing, it's probably accurate. Something else I'd just say, current. It needs to be current, right? Especially if you're talking about current events. You can't bring up something from the early 90s or 80s to try to use as a source for your ideas.
Yeah, it needs to be, you know, from a reputable source. So it needs from when I say reputation, does that align with authority?
I think having authority means having a knowledge block or base around a certain topic so that you can talk about it in a way to help people make good decisions about it. For me, I think you're getting at objectivity. Like if you go to a website or read a book and it's not clear who the author or authors is or where the money is coming from to create the site, or what the purpose of the site is,
right.
That's very strategic on their end for why they're doing that.
Right. Some people are motivated in order for a cause, and it's well known, and you can then understand why they're talking about a certain topic, and they're reputable in that way. That
right.
makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So again, just think about when you're looking at these sources online specifically, if you got something and it makes you feel good and tickles your brain inside, don't just stop there. Go look for other sources to try to confirm or disconfirm what you found. Right. That's a scientific approach to intelligence. It's called falsification. Not stopping where what you found is what you wanted to find. Going beyond that to try to disconfirm it.
Right. That makes total sense. So let me do a playful thought for you.
Okay.
Here. I love to do these. You know, sometimes I'm a futurist, and I like to think about with all the dilemmas that we have today, right? You could see all the backpedaling that Zach and I were having to do when it came time to talk about the race and gender thing as it applies to white men, white males, right? As soon as we were done with that, talking about that, I immediately wanted to give a disclaimer and say, oh, I realize that I'm coming from a position of privilege and that those women who were sitting by me saying things that would clearly be offensive to a white man, don't offend me because I know that I don't deserve to be offended because of my position of privilege. I literally wanted to go down that road and talk about that. But so that just shows you, A, the power of ideas and the power of societal agreed upon issues of the day and what the proper way to handle them is. And so I immediately was like, oh, my God, the immune system's going to come for me. When we release this, I am going to get attacked. I better qualify. So I wanted to say all that. Now, that's today. Think about how complicated that is today because we're able to spread this information through a podcast.
Right.
Typically, in the past, we would have just said these things in a room to our friends. There would have been maybe some muted response. People would have probably forgotten about it and we would have moved on. This is going to be on the record forever, the things that we said. So that's the problem brings today. Let's even take it a step further because if we're talking about the definition of thoughts being or intellectual freedom of being the ability to have or consider thoughts without ramification. At least today you have to admit, you have to verbalize that you had these thoughts or that you considered these thoughts, and that's what you get persecuted for. What happens in the future when they have advanced fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, and they can tell what thoughts enter and exit your mind?
That goes, I was going to talk about Robert Greene and the 48 Laws of Power. One law of power is think whatever you want, but act in the ways that society deems acceptable. So what you're saying is that law of power will be transformed in a major way if and when those big brother or whoever, you know, whoever it is, private company or government, has the ability to do that on a mass scale.
Well, and I think two things to point out is, number one, we violated that law today.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm comfortable with what I said. People probably couldn't pin me down on any major topic we talked about.
Yeah, but still, we exposed...
We talked about controversial topics, but we didn't dive down our opinions of them.
Yeah, okay. Good point. I still think there's nothing good to come
from
there.
You don't want to even mention these
things. We shouldn't have even
said
that. Yeah. And so number one, we violated that. And number two, yeah, what happens in the future? Well, you want to talk about a... What's the book, 1984?
Well, 1984 and Brave New World, V for Vendetta. It's all just control. You know, people will be taking their Soma pill, you know, right, from Brave New World, and that'll regulate our thoughts and our emotions so that, I mean, shit, people, we're already doing that today with all the pharma stuff out there, but everyone will be taking the one pill to make sure you're happy and neutral and the thoughts are going in the right direction.
So let's talk about change challenges. This is an awesome one. I love everything that we talked about. Like, do you want to push yourself in the things that you think? Do you want to go ahead and say, I feel uncomfortable with this thought. Maybe that's something I should explore. Should I explore the uncomfortable
thought? We have a friend who will remain nameless that he or she is thinking about making a move and moving somewhere. And one of the reasons they gave is they feel that they are not challenged by the people they're living around. The people that they're living around are complacent with their spot in life, and they might be good spots in life, but there's no challenge. And he or she went on and on about, I haven't had any in-depth controversial conversations in I don't know how long, was
wow.
this person's exact statement. And they wow. said, I'd love to be able to move back around, and it's a mutual friend,
yep.
Around you guys, because all you guys is talk about controversial stuff all the time, and
we
now
do.
You're recording it.
We did. Now we're recording it and putting it out to everyone.
So
yeah,
go do your change challenge if you've got one off the top of your head. If not, I've got one.
I don't.
Okay. Mine's simple, but it'll get you out of your zone. Have a controversial conversation with someone. And it can be your wife, and it can be about love or your lack of love, or it doesn't matter, with your kid, or with that uncle that has very different political thoughts than you. But here's your challenge. Your goal is to do two things. Control your emotions during the conversation. So you'll have to do a lot of prep work to work up to that point. Maybe bring in some notes and some emotional cues and reminders to stay even keel. And two, the main functional goal of the conversation is to learn their viewpoint. Not to ask questions in a Socratic method and show them that they don't know anything about the topic, but simply try to truly learn and understand their perspective and not even share your own. If that's too difficult for you, then go find something to read that is different from what you believe or the ideas that you currently hold, and just try to get a better understanding of your enemy or the opposition or someone you don't like or agree with, what their perspective is.
I love both of those, and let me comment on each one of them.
Sure.
First, on the first one, I highly encourage that you do go have a controversial conversation. It's going to be very uncomfortable. It's going to be hard. But when you do it, I would just say a good guide that I would give is pull from our communication episode and try to become a good listener. Whenever you have a controversial conversation, you're going to have all this emotion stirred up within you. Try to experience that emotion, but not act on it. Try to notice it, but try to let it pass and try to allow your response to be based on something that is well thought out and well reasoned. Zach talked at the beginning of this episode about being able to take other people's ideas, break them down, and then synthesize your own. In that process, if you're having a heated conversation with someone else, a controversial conversation, that process can get messy. So try to stay even keeled and try to do that synthesis on the fly. And I would also say be willing to admit to yourself that maybe there's some more thinking about it that you have to do when you're responding with your when you're giving responses. So that's on the first one. On the second one, I would say The second one is go read something that you disagree with. It flies in the face of your currently held belief. I believe that that is a good exercise that needs to be repeated often. I try to get myself to do it, but you talk about personal discomfort, internal discomfort. I'll use the word disgust almost. There is some sort of negative reaction that happens inside of you when you are fighting against an internally held belief. When you're trying to take in information that is in direct conflict with everything that you know to be true, right?
Right.
But it's such a good thing to do because it makes you a better, more well-rounded holistic person. Yep. Holistic. Yep. I actually don't know who you're talking about. The one of our friends who said, I'm considering a move because I don't get any good conversation. And you don't say who they are.
Yeah.
But that I actually really love that idea. I think that there's an importance to diversity of thought and view that makes you a better, more well-rounded person.
And that's why college should be amazing and have this truly diverse thought, no matter how offensive it is across either side of the spectrum. But it's just not. Yeah. I can tell you that. It's just not. There's very little good dialogue going on between students or between students and faculty. It is so buffered and censored. I just find it unfortunate.
It's what's crazy is I would say that at least in my opinion, and this is a poorly informed opinion, at one point in time, universities were the place where you had diversity of thought. They were the place where you could say anything. And
they did have diversity of thought, but they didn't have diversity of people, though.
Yeah, not people. Well, and maybe they didn't even have diversity of thought, but they were the place where you could say things where it wasn't okay to say out in society. Back when, you know, they were censoring, you couldn't. Who was the band? They tried to put out a song and it had like a curse. They thought they had a curse word in it. The FBI launched an investigation. Like, we're talking about back in the 50s. Like, the authority structure was trying to keep things contained. The universities were where the growth and the exploration was occurring. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like the opposite has happened today in that. And universities, everyone's so sensitive about the things that they say and hear and feel, and it has to be a safe space, right?
Right.
So you have to protect these students and these children from these awful potential.
Well, we could get into a whole nother episode, and that a lot of that's driven by one thing: money, litigation.
Yeah, but it seems like it's flipped. That's the only point.
Either way, this one's a fun one. We try to keep them to 30 minutes. We are currently at 46 minutes and 13 seconds.
I guess we got
to
stop.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen to go take Zach's 2 change challenges. Those were excellent.
Thank you.
And experiment with life.
Have a good one.